from the standpoint of this exhibition, you had to make some decisions on what you were going to present. I'm wondering how you made the decisions to show what you're showing in stores.
I wanted to put some pop work in there because, you know, I know that people love the pictures of this, you know, young pop stars and rappers and entertainers and stuff like that. I wanted to have those in there, but I also wanted to have some of the work that I do for myself, like the Tower of Babel, which we are sort of debuting there, and some other pieces that I make for myself. Really wanted just a kind of a cross-section of different things that I do. I think that's one of the reasons I've had a long career. I have a lot of variety in my life, you know, in my photography, and do lots of different types of work. I started off doing weddings when I was a kid for money, but I learned that that was teaching me how to work under pressure. And then for years I worked for Condé Nast Traveler, you know, while doing other work, but it taught me how to work on location. So I learned from all these different experiences, and I just kept myself open because I liked variety. Started in galleries before ever working for magazines. I had gallery shows in New York's East Village. And the first one was when I was 21, and then started working for Interview and stuff. So Interview kind of gave me my start and kind of opened the door to magazines, and that led to like a whole long career. And now I'm showing in galleries. With the last 20 years, I've been back in museums and galleries, which, you know, in the 80s and 90s, you could not do commercial work and show in galleries, like in museums. Like, that was just taboo. It was like not done. There was no crossover. And now there's a lot of crossover. Like, artists are always doing collaborations with like fashion brands. You know, you see Murakami doing pocketbooks for Louis Vuitton that are, you know, being sold at his museum show, you know, for 50 grand. It's crazy. When I was a kid, like, you couldn't do anything commercial if you're a fine artist. You were a fine artist. If you're a popular culture artist, that was a separate thing. Then I was so busy working through those 20, I didn't realize the whole world had changed. And then I did that film Rise in 2006 when I took a year off, and I got a call from a gallery. And I'm like, really? I said, I'm not really doing celebrities right now. And they're like, that's okay. You can do whatever you want. It was like this full circle moment. I got to do whatever I wanted to do. And that kind of like opened the door to, you know, making work specifically for exhibitions and galleries and making series and stuff like that. I think that having lots of options as a photographer is a good thing, you know, not just being so specialized that you just do one type of thing. Although I think some people have had really long careers doing that. Like, for me, I like a lot of variety and a lot of different types of challenges. And, you know, when you're doing a portrait or you're doing an album cover, you have to really think about the person you're doing it for, the type of music they're doing, what they've done in the past, and you kind of take it from there. I always try to take a portrait that kind of tells you a lot about the person in some way, you know. There's a lot of different types of work, and I kind of wanted to represent that, even though we had limited space. I think the show came out really well. I'm looking forward. I'm trying to get out there so I can do a lecture and kind of like meet the students and see it in person, as I grew up in Connecticut. So I'm looking forward to coming back.
One of the other things that struck me is the size of some of your images in the presentation, the large scale works, the After the Deluge, the Seismic Shift, the great collage of Vox Populi of all the celebrities that you've photographed over the years. That's not something I recall seeing in galleries and museums when I visited them. Was this just simply the scale that you chose to work at, or it ended up being what you built and figured, okay, it's going to have to be a large presentation?
In 2006, when I had the invitation to come back and show this at this really great gallery in Berlin, I did the Deluge and the accompanying pieces, which were like the flooded cathedral and the flooded museums. Those were all large scale pieces. Like the first Deluge was 30 feet long, you know, in panels. And I learned color printing in New York, and I printed for 6 years, 6 years black and white, and then another 6 years color. I taught myself, and I do a lot of experimenting in the darkroom, but, you know, I still oversee all the printing on my work. It's still done at my studio. I'm really, really, like, into the printing. It's a marriage of like, how you present the work and the printing quality. All of that is a marriage of also the concept, and it's a technical thing, but, you know, you marry technique with the idea and the color palette that you want to have complementary colors. And that's a big thing for me, is having a good color atmosphere. So You know, these things are all kind of intuitive, a lot of it. I mean, except the technical part. I mean, when I was analog, it was like, I didn't want any grain. And when it, you know, I switched over to digital, like, I don't want any digital breakup or anything like that. I'll look at pictures today, one analog and one shot digitally, and I can't tell which is which unless I look at the date. The technical part of it is a big thing for me. And I like the big image. I think still images stop time. I think some of these images need to be big because there's so much detail in them. And I think that it kind of like in our age, we're competing with screens and we're seeing so many images, so many more images than people even saw 20 years ago, that it has to be striking. And I think that the size is, it's not just to be like, take up space and just do something monumental, but just it's in order to really, you know, get the attention of the viewer, have them stay in front of this picture for a little while, have it stop that time for a minute so they can take it in and see really what it is that you know, I'm communicating with the picture, you know, because every picture tells a story. At least I try that. I really want people to understand. I like clarity both in the quality of the image, but also in my concept, my idea. Like, I want to be sure of what it is I'm trying to say and how to achieve that, what the story is, what I'm trying to communicate. And when you do communicate with people, like, you know, it's kind of magical. It's like that's the beauty of art. You know, you're talking to somebody, you're communicating with them, maybe confirming an idea that they had, or, you know, an idea that was floating in their head, and they're solidifying something. There's this connection. That's the beauty of art. And it's that sort of magical connection. And not people are not going to connect to every image, but if they connect to a couple, that's like really cool. It's like people listening to a song, and that song like stays in their head all day. You know what I mean? And that's, I mean, music is like the strongest art form, I think, because it really touches people's souls like so quickly. But yeah, I try to emulate that with photos. I want to make my images like music, where they really touch people.
You've said that conception comes from wanting to share something, and you've clearly been talking about that in the last couple of minutes. Specifically, you want to communicate things directly. When does an idea get to the point where you know that you have to act upon it? Because ideas probably come in from every day when you're looking at something, doing something, or meeting with or talking with people. At what point do you feel that you must act on what you're trying to get out?
Sometimes, you know, like, especially with the fine artwork and the gallery work and museum work, like, you know, I'll be thinking about a project for, it'll be gestating for a long time, sometimes shorter, but many times it's like a year or two that I'll be thinking about ideas and then, you know, making drawings of them and kind of thinking about it. And then finally, like, okay, I've got to do that. Like, it's sort of like a pressure cooker. It's like, now I got to get this out, you know? So yeah, it kind of works that way with the fine artwork. The other work is assignments. So you're kind of given a date that you got to get it done by. And I also like that. It's another way of working. But I like also having a deadline because it kind of gives you the, you know, got to get this done and I got to come up with an idea. And you like really force yourself to think of some way to do it that, you know, hasn't been seen, a new way of looking at something or looking at a person.
You get requests, I'm sure, from artists and others to have you work with them to take their images or work with them on a project. You said in one interview that I saw that people want to know what you're going to do and you try to keep it as vague as possible. And I guess when they get to the studio, there's a mutual discussion about how you want to share and work together. How has that been working recently? Because you're out there with a lot of material and I have to think that you're getting called all the time.
We get calls and, you know, sometimes it works out, you know, like a schedule wise and the artist, you know, and I like what they're doing and I'm interested in what they're doing. And so it's a good fit, you know, and when it is, if it's a music video, like you have to be very specific on what you're going to do. But if it's a portrait, I try to keep it looser. So I usually have lots of different setups for that day. And we'll go from one thing to another, and I'll talk with the team, the stylist and everything, and the set builders. And then the artist comes into the studio, they'll see all these things and they'll get it when they see it visually, but they'll be more difficult to articulate, you know, and sound maybe kind of weird. But when they see it, it's like, oh, I get that. I see how I fit in there. And then I leave room for a spontaneity. I leave room for them to add something to it or make contributions to it. So it really is a collaboration. You know, I can't stress enough how important having a really good team when you're doing the type of, you know, conceptual work that I do. like having a good team of people. But if I'm left alone too and have to build this set, I can do it. I can do that as well. I've done that recently, you know, with just some friends, and it came out really well. And, you know, just having to kind of build it ourselves and put it all together. And, you know, I have a studio, so I get to work on this sets for a long time. There's no overtime. I think a lot of budgetary constrictions make it difficult for people to do the type of work that I do. But what I luckily have is my own studio. So I keep a lot of props and flats and stuff, and we'll reuse them in different ways. You won't recognize them per se, but having your own studio is a real luxury because you can spend a lot of time on a set and you can make a lot of adjustments and changes or repaint things if they're not, the colors aren't working or whatever. That's really something I'm grateful for.
Was it difficult to make the move to do film and video after doing still photography for so long?
No, it was actually super easy. Like, it was amazing. Like, I felt really comfortable. Like, we went from doing, well, our productions were getting pretty big. I did that Diesel Sailors Kissing. Like, it was like a cast of 80 people. It was like, you know, shooting in San Francisco, like, you know, just this massive production. So when I did the first video, which was Moby, it won Video of the Year at the Music Video Awards. So that was like my first one out of the gate, really. And it was kind of like based on a true thing. It was such a beautiful song. And of course, you start with the song. And the song was like, you know, this old, you know, spiritual that he had sampled from the turn of the century. And it was called Natural Blues. It was off of his big hit album, Play. I did a story kind of based on my own life. My mom worked in a convalescent hospital for a time, and she would take me in there as like a four-year-old, a five-year-old. And I would sort of like just to, because people wouldn't visit these old people, you know, and they had grandchildren, they loved children. And even though sometimes it was a little scary for me in the beginning, because they would want to hug and everything, and you know, you're little, but I kind of knew my role. And so I based it on that experience. And I met this one woman, and fingers were already on her tray table, like she's playing a piano. And I found out she had been a really famous concert pianist. And there was photos of her in her room when she was young and beautiful. And the concept of the Moby video stemmed from that. It's like, what happens to like a pop star, like when they're 90 and they're looking back at their life? It was really like a very, very heartfelt, sensitive song, and so I made the video in that realm. But if you're working with like a disco song, like I did like last week for that singer Jade, I was just getting my disco fantasy out because I grew up during, like, I was 14 years old in the discotheque, and I really don't think the 70s ever were really represented very well. Like, when people do it, they always do it with bell bottoms and sort of like really bad afro wigs and stuff. And like the people actually were really stylish, and the dancing was incredible. We found these amazing dancers, and it's a very light disco type song. So I finally got to do this sort of American Bandstand slash turns into like Carrie the horror film. So I kind of referenced those two ideas that were like favorite things of mine in 1978 when I was a kid, and married them in some weird way, and it, somehow it worked, you know. It was just super fun. I wouldn't say there was depth to it, but there was, for me, like just nailing the looks of how people dressed and the couples dancing and the choreography was so important to kind of really get that feeling of what it was like to be in a discotheque in New York in the 70s. You know, we kind of, I think we really accomplished that, and I was so happy about that, you know.
Yeah.
And but it was a real disco song, so that you can't, like, you have a disco song, you can't do some deep sort of sad treatment. You know, the treatment has to match the music.
I was going to ask you about that, because I know you had some background working in Studio 54 when you were very young.
I used to go there, and then which was really fun. Then I started working there, which was a horrible place to work, but going there was really fun.
I looked at the Nora Jones, Those Sweet Words, and Jennifer Lopez in the nightclub, and then you mentioned that Jade, the most recent one. There's a lot of that feel in my mind, because I knew you had some background with disco, that you really captured that. And Nora Jones actually being on the screen rather than doing the karaoke thing on stage and then watching the people in the audience do their dancing. And then,
That was sort of like, it's supposed to look like an airport bar, you know,
right?
Like there's like one of them, or a Marriott, like a hotel, like an airport hotel bar. It's supposed to look like the most banal place on earth. And then I wanted her to come up and just do this karaoke song. It was like super conceptual, it was like one take, you know? And she was, I think Nora Jones was incredible. Like, I think she just, her father is Ravi Shankar, you know, who taught George Harrison the sitar. He's the greatest sitar player. You know, she grew up seeing all that stuff about fame. And I think she just is like an amazing artist because she kind of chose to kind of step aside and like tour and do smaller venues. She doesn't need the giant stadiums to be fulfilled. I think she's happily married and just living a really cool life where she doesn't get mobbed. And you know, because it's I look at pop stardom and I'm like, why would anybody want that? Like, it's just hell, you know? Like, when you're that famous, it's like, oh my God, like, it's so hard to deal with that. People don't realize how hard they work, and that's why they get like, when things blow up really big, like they're so overworked these days too, because they're not making money off of album sales. So they have the tour and they have to constantly do stuff and sell merchandise and all this stuff. And it's like, it just wears them out, you know, and it can kind of take away from the artistry. Touring is brutal. Great when you're 18, but like later on, you know, it's like, it's hard to do a world tour or even an American tour. Like, it takes a lot out of a person.
I've talked with a lot of musicians over the years about that, and they tour because they want to play. They'd rather be on stage than elsewhere, for the most part. And
Yeah,
some of them don't like
that's
even being
true.
in the studio because the work is so much different.
Yeah, but they get to the stadium level, there can really be like a lot. Like, it can be so overwhelming. You know, like, it's pretty wild. I really admire the ones that just handle it really well, you know, and still maintain their kind of humanity.
This exhibit are enjoying at the Benton Museum is kind of a retrospective and a snapshot of what you've been doing during your career. What's next? What are projects that you're working on that you're looking forward to or thinking about doing because you, as an artist, want to move forward, do things that you want to be involved with?
I have a place in Maui where I really like, you know, I live, but I've been working so much that I haven't been there in a few months. So I want to get back there and just kind of like, you know, think of like the sort of next art pieces for myself that I want to do. We've got some really interesting portrait shoots coming up. We're doing the cast members from the last 50 years of Saturday Night Live. That's
Wow.
going to be a major shoot. And you know, I started watching that when I was a kid, and it's pretty wild that it's 50 years of, and some of the ones even from the first season are going to be there. So it's really exciting, you know, all the way up to like Maya Rudolph and Kristen Wiig, and it's really, really exciting. Comedians are really special people, you know, so it's going to be interesting to have like so many of them at one time in a room, but I can handle it, I hope. It's definitely a challenge.